cars are no longer feats of engineering design. Now they're one of the most sophisticated and expensive mass-market software products. Around 90% of all new capabilities in automobiles are software-defined. The industry, as a result, has been forced to change. But is it moving fast enough? I'm Georgie Frost, and this is the So What from BCG.
If I compare the vehicle from 50 years ago, it was literally like a freedom machine. This was the thing you get into to get away. When we look at the car of the future, it has thousands of sensors, cameras, body temperature, you have vibrations, everything that is being measured, so it's literally the opposite.
Today I'm talking to Alex Costa, BCG's lead for automotive tech.
We are just at the very start of a major transformation of what has been a very consistent product for the past 100 years and has looked and felt more or less the same way. Yes, it went a bit faster. Yes, it went a bit more clean over time. But I think now we will see that it will change fundamentally. The reason why that is mainly because we are seeing the shift from mechanical to software. And what that will do is it will bring innovation at an exponential speed, because basically when you buy the product, it's not a fixed product anymore, but it can change forever in the future. It will constantly download updates, get new functionality, new capabilities. And there are in particular two main areas which I would like to highlight, one being the AI driver. So essentially you replace the human driver by a machine operation. That is one big change that is only possible through software and the latest computing. And the other one that is happening is the digital cabin. The whole interior experience, which was very much focused around you driving the vehicle and pushing buttons, well, that's now going to be an immersion space, like an experience environment, which of course, if you're driven around, you can now fully explore. So those two are the main ones that will feel and look in a very different way than what they do today.
Before we get to the future, just give me an idea of where we are now. When I spoke earlier about 90% of all new capabilities in automobiles are software-defined, where is this software? What's it doing in the cars that we're driving?
So I think the comparison that you could do is, if you think about how it worked for smartphones, initially you had keyboards. Keyboards were very fixed. You bought them, they were very mechanical. People loved it. They became very fast and efficient at using it, but it was always the same. Now you changed it to a software-defined device, which was the touchscreen. So the change was you could actually continue evolving it over time. And now it is predictive. It is super fast. You have 1,000 different variations of using it, and it has really grown into many different topics. So I think right now we are right at the stage where we are starting to replace the physical keyboard by the first touchscreens, but they still have software version 1.0. What we now will see is this will now go exponential as innovation kicks in and as technology players bring their software into the vehicle at a very fast pace.
Why do you think the automotive industry has been so slow? And I think about it in comparison to perhaps other industries.
So I would almost first say, I wouldn't say that the automotive industry has per se been super slow. The problem is highly complex. On one hand, auto manufacturers are today only doing about 20% of the overall vehicle. The other 80% come from suppliers. So there's a huge amount of companies that are involved in actually making a car happen, literally hundreds. So if you want to change anything more radically, as what we are looking at the moment, you need to change the ways of working for all those hundreds of companies, the capabilities, the people, what they know, what they need to do. Second, it is a highly regulated environment because you're actually driving around people, and there's life and death questions, which you don't have for most other consumer electronics products. So as a result of that, if you want to make this happen, you really need to make sure that you fit into all the liability issues and you don't get essentially bills afterwards of billions of dollars because you have made a mistake in the software somewhere. And then third, there's about 15 million people globally directly working in the automotive industry. And there's another 50 million of people that are dependent on it. Think about chemicals companies, other engineering companies. So you would have to change many of them eventually to come up and really turn around the industry. So all of this is leading to this being a hard problem, so to say. And I think people are acknowledging that they need to move, but it just can't move as fast as they should or want to.
Do you see a place for the traditional automotive industry, or do you think this is just going to be dominated by tech companies?
So this is an excellent question, and I think the jury is out if I look at it today. And you do see them coming with very different capabilities. The auto companies come in and they do understand the complexity of assembling the hundreds of parts of playing regulation, understanding what they need to do to deliver a safe experience eventually. They also understand all the differences on a regional level because driving a vehicle in one place is very different from another place. Tech companies are learning this the hard way at the moment. But then on the other side, you have the tech companies that obviously are much faster. They are used to innovation at the speed of light, and they basically release new capabilities every few months. But they get to the point of being careful about the potential liabilities, as I said before, of life and death questions. And if you get stuck in this, and there were some spectacular such cases in the last 2 years of self-driving attempts by technology companies that basically blew up completely. And I think we will see in the near future how somebody is probably putting all their chips on the table and getting this really to the market.
Are we seeing new challenges emerge?
So I think the kinds of challenges that we see at the moment are also massive partnership challenges, because I think both the tech companies and the auto companies acknowledge that they need to somehow find a path together. None of the two can probably work entirely without the other. However, the ways of cooperation are massively challenged because they come from two different planets, literally. Whereas automotive companies are all about global scale, suppliers, waterfall cycles, slow development, very safe, working with a ton of different suppliers that they all control. Technology companies are about fast iteration, trying it out very quickly, building platforms and ecosystems and working with hundreds of thousands of different players, but in a very different ball game. Also being very close to the user. So they come really literally from different cultures, capabilities, philosophies, and ways of acting in the industry. And they haven't quite cracked how they should work together. To me, this is one of the main unlocks that we will need to see over the near future, hopefully.
Do you have an answer?
I think it will be a mix depending on the area where you're looking at. There is going to be a fundamental operating system in the vehicle that will have to come from a more classical OEM manufacturing approach, because that is something that needs to be standardized across the industry. That's the only way you get scale and you get cheaper electronics into the vehicles. If everybody does their own thing, it's going to be too expensive. But then you have, for example, the in-cabin area, which I was speaking about, which is the classical domain of the tech players. They just are years ahead from what any other player is doing in the market right now. And my expectation is that this will be a logical place where the tech players will eventually dominate. And then you have the interesting area of the AI driver, where I think we are still seeing the fight of the technologies between the ones that start gradually and go there step by step, as we see most auto players doing, and the ones that are trying to go straight on to the robotaxis and then work their way back from there. And we don't see them landing either yet.
You mentioned there issues with safety, and I want to delve a little bit more into some of the implications of software-driven cars. I mean, looking at the global supply chains at the moment, the shortage of chips, those sorts of things, I asked at the start whether automotive companies are moving fast enough. Maybe the drive, as it were, no pun intended, to go to full software is going too fast. Let's look at some of the implications, some of the good ones and some of the bad ones.
If I start, because you mentioned the safety topic, and I think that is a key complexity that we need to look at. Because on one side, a major part of the opportunity is assisted driving and automated driving eventually. That is a huge value pool. We expect that about three quarters of all the value of software in the future will come from assisted driving and autonomous driving capabilities. Now, to make that safe, the expectation is that it needs to be at least 10 times to 100 times better than a human is. Otherwise, the expectation is this will not be socially acceptable and it will never be accepted by regulators. That means, in practical terms, that you cannot have more than one fatality per 100 million miles driven. Now, we are sometimes approaching this in easy situations where cars drive slowly, where there's good weather, where the streets are wide, and where there's nobody else on the road. However, whenever we have complexities coming, we are very far from having evidence and really the support to make sure that this is really feasible. So in order to get to safety, you need tons and tons, literally exabytes of data and practical experience and simulation on a massive amount. And so at the moment, what we see is a race to collect the data, to try out in a gazillion different fashions how you can get into what are so-called corner cases of situations. Just imagine any kind of strange animal passing the road or a plane landing on the highway in front of you. So all of those situations actually exist, and you need to somehow have simulated them so that the algorithms learn about it. So this is a massive investment into data and into experience. And this is something where the auto players are approaching in the stepwise approach, learning as they go. They start off by having simple highways staying in one lane. Then they learn to shift lanes. Then they eventually learn what to do if something happens and the driver is not interacting. So how do you stop if you are on the second lane? How do you stop suddenly to get into a safe mode? How do you exit or enter a highway? And then you go into urban. So you basically work your way through this, and you always make sure that you are safe in what you have been learning so far, and you do the next step. That is one approach of doing it, and I think definitely one that seems to be working eventually. The other approach is you take a black box AI, a big machine, you don't know what's happening inside, but you just train it and train it and train it, and you hope that it continues to learn how to drive, which is probably what a human does eventually. But we just see that the amount of computation that is required to do this and of data might surpass anything that we have ever seen. So those two paths are currently still kind of competing in the market. And at the end of the day, the regulators will have to make a hard choice if they want to homologate one or the other or both. And that's where the jury is out, where we will eventually land. So safety is going to be a huge concern.
Safety is one area, and absolutely it will do. Privacy, I imagine, is another.
So privacy is another interesting one, and I think one that we haven't even started to really look into. If I compare the vehicle from 50 years ago, it was literally like a freedom machine. This was the thing you get into to get away. Just like drop it all, drive out, have also your first love, have your first expectations of like adventures that you do. And I think when we look at the car of the future, it's going to be almost the opposite because it is totally connected. It is always clear where it is. It has thousands of sensors in it, around it. You have cameras, you have body temperature, you have vibrations, you have everything that is being measured. So it's literally the opposite. Now, of course, that will give you all kinds of convenience, of experiences, of new things that you can explore. But it needs to be clear that we are getting into a space where, depending on where you live on the planet, you might have experiences that you don't want to have in a super connected vehicle that has sensors all over the place. And I think this is where at least I see some very positive developments in Europe, like we saw on GDPR and so on, which are being deployed also globally. But I think we haven't really cracked the case how to think about a truly fully connected, fully sensorized vehicle and how that's going to play out eventually.
It makes me wonder about cost. It sounds very expensive to get to a point where you want to be. I know it's a very difficult thing to predict in long term in the future because this isn't going to happen tomorrow, is it? But is there any space, do you think, or will there be any space for the traditional car? Because plausibly it might be cheaper. I don't know. Would it?
So my expectation is actually, first of all, in order to develop a self-driving capability, my expectation is you can easily spend 10 billion plus. The number of players globally that are able to spend that amount of money is naturally limited. And that basically also leans to a consolidation of the market of those that are eventually able to deliver this. Now, that being said, when you have developed it for the first time, that is when the typical tech cost curves set in, which is what typically happens. If you look at technology, think about the first big screen TVs that you had at home. They started at 10,000 bucks. Now you get them for 100. And the same happens, of course, for the chips, for the connectivity, for all other kinds of computation that is required. Likely scenario is you will spend the 10 billion, there will be a few surviving companies that eventually make it to that point, and then they will productize it. So make it cheaper, scale it up, get more and more into hardware, into chips that you can mass produce, and then you will be able to penetrate all the different vehicles. There will be a period, though, over the next few years when it starts more or less at the upper end of the vehicle spectrum. And I think that is probably a little bit unfair because it means that mostly initially there will be only certain segments that will have access to all those fantastic new innovations and maybe also more safety. And then it will be regulated so that it will really go into everything like anti-brake systems and other things that were regulated the same way. And that's when it goes into the volume, goes down market.
How will this sit alongside current infrastructure? How will our towns and cities need to change?
Another unexplored space, I would say. There are a lot of very controversial studies that we see. Same, for example, for mobility. We saw that going to shared mobility can have potentially very positive effects, but can also have negative effects. And if you look at the net-net, actually maybe traffic is not improving in cities, because it might even turn some people to shift from basically metro, bus and other kinds of approaches over to shared vehicles. So suddenly you have more vehicles on the road, whereas all the ones that already have individual vehicles might continue to do so. So you are more stuck in traffic than ever before, despite having shared vehicles. Now, a similar thing may well happen on some of the other expectations. Like, there's a hope that we can get rid of parking spaces in cities, which is a huge driver of areas, right? If you look at the way especially US cities have been built, but also Chinese cities to a significant degree, the more recent ones, they are really built around the car. Now, if suddenly you don't need any more this parking space because you can send them autonomously somewhere underground, well, that's going to give massive space back to other redeployments. So I think this is something that needs to be explored, but we have quite some way to go before we actually do see that at scale. We will see real self-parking cars probably second half of this decade. Self-driving cars will be another 5 to 10 years after that. And then they will have to be sold. Today we have 1.5 billion cars in the world. So in order to replace at least half of them, it's going to take us another 10 years. So the time when we actually do see cities changing in their fabric big time is going to take 20 years, except for the few urban centers where it is pushed very heavily by governments, regulators, where we might see faster change. But like, the volume is going to happen in 20 years' time.
Is this the end of car ownership? Because it just sounds to me like a kind of Uber, but with AI drivers, would work.
I think we've seen some interesting waves over the past 10 years on this. First of all, there was a huge expectation that we have autonomous driving cars 10 years ago. That turned out to be not quite right. Then we went into a period of everything is turning shared mobility and we will all leave our cars and young people don't want to own cars anymore. It's all going to be rented. And so everybody was talking about that and it's all going to happen in the next 5 years. Now, again, we look at the numbers. It hasn't turned out that way. Most of those companies have somehow go bankrupt. Corona hasn't helped. It has actually further amplified individuality and people wanting to sit in their own little cubicles, so to say. And I think if we look forward, our expectation at the moment is that we will actually see a further strengthening of the individual car. And that is also true if you look at the biggest volume driver of all, which is China. There's about, I think, 16% that are claiming that a car does not raise your status, which means all the others do. So there is still this huge amount of people that are entering their next status level, and they just expect that having a car is part of making that journey, and they want to be kind of participating in what other people in the world have been doing before. So I think we do see a continued good time for the individual car, and that's not going to change with autonomous driving anytime near term.
Are you a car guy, Alex?
So that's a cool question, because I never was. When I actually spent my first 30 years, I never had petrol in my veins. I'm actually electrical engineer, so I'm more on the side of the clean fuel. But in particular, I'm more a software and tech guy. And so what I find fascinating now is how this industry is now entering the tech age and how it's going to be transformed just as the others have. And this makes me very excited to watch.
Because I imagine it does, but I imagine it also makes petrol heads rather nervous about what you're talking about and rather grumpy, I imagine.
I would say that's a massive phenomenon. And you do actually also see a substantial turnover even of C-level people in the past 2 years over exactly this issue. And you can basically see them in the news every other day. Either it is management that is being exchanged because there's an expectation that transformation should happen more quickly, or you see significant merger and acquisition moves, which are also on a scale that we have never seen before. So there's a risk taking in the industry at the moment to somehow ready your organization to this new future that is very hard to get there. By the way, I don't think it is anymore the fact that people do not intellectually recognize that this is what needs to happen. I think the petrol heads have come around to at least analytically understand the problem. But I think we are still light years ahead of that kind of transforming into actual culture change, process change, new capability build-up. And it's just what has happened in any other industry before. You are in a space where you're locked of your own success. The profits in the industry are still huge overall. And that doesn't really create a burning platform for you to change anytime soon. So making the change while you're successful and all the people who are in your organization have always been successful in the old way is just very hard to achieve.
What are the implications for big tech?
So first of all, this is a goldmine to them, clearly. I mean, whoever you talk to, first of all, it is the ability for them to get into an extension of what they have successfully been building in other places. If you've built Alexa, you want to make sure that Alexa works everywhere. If you have already captured 5 different devices at home, be it your smart home and your smartphone and your TV and a few other things, well, you just want to get into the car and make your software ecosystem as relevant as possible to all of those places. And it actually looks like this is going to work because people are used to the habits. They love the intelligence. They love the simplicity, the seamlessness that they have to have their digital lives across all of those different spaces. So it's getting into it immediately. Now, that being said, the technology companies, they do come around the fact that a car is not as simple as a smartphone. It does have liabilities coming with it that could eventually kill them overall. As we see for some recalls in the automotive industry, there are recalls that literally require you to recall hundreds of thousands of vehicles at a cost that is just enormous, and liabilities that can take your company down. So this is what we see tech companies now facing next. Huge opportunity, clear right to win, but a huge risk also to their business model.
Finally, I want to talk about the relationship with electric cars and the climate change movement and where that sits in your future, because there are some parallels. There is, you know, the idea that some people are very opposed to having electric cars will always be because they just don't feel like proper cars, as it were. But also, you know, there's a lot of technology there. There's a lot of advancement. And then you're now requesting that the industry makes even more changes. Are these complementary or are they... Is it a completely different kettle of fish?
They are completely complementary. I think what we actually see, in my view, is first of all, the industry is really getting the head around electrification. And we do see that the numbers are now coming up massively in terms of new products. Like literally hundreds of new products are introduced to the market now within a very short time frame. And in 10 years' time, more than half of all the vehicles sold will be pure battery electric vehicles. So that's a massive shift. And the industry has done it fairly quickly. And to be fair, that is still a continuation of what they had before, because it is still a vehicle that drives you from A to B. It is still largely driven by a powertrain, similar setup, similar capabilities. You sell it similarly to the same people. So in many respects, that was kind of an easier task, even if it is already a generational shift for the industry. Now, in order to deliver, though, an electric vehicle successfully, you do need software. Because you do need to be embedded in charging networks. You need to be predicting the way you use your battery, because batteries are a very scarce item. They basically deplete very quickly. So you want to be much smarter in the way you use it. So if you have software that is smart enough to predict how the road is going to be over the next few miles and therefore can steer the vehicle powertrain and torque and so on in a different way, well, that's going to be a key contributor to make it effective. And if we look at some of the trailblazing companies that have been first to deploy electric vehicles, that's what they did. They had technology stack totally geared towards a climate-friendly, electricity-centric future and making the whole experience much more integrated for that new set of customers. So to me, the two are really going hand in hand, and electrification is now the ability for the auto companies to also rethink the whole setup on the software side and drive it forward.
Alex, thank you so much. And to you for listening, we'd love to know your thoughts. To get in contact, leave us a message at thesowhat@bcg.com. And if you like this podcast, why not hit subscribe and leave a rating wherever you found us? It helps other people find us too.